Max was wearing two guns tied down. Smoke hooked his thumbs behind the buckle of his gun belt.
How do we play this, Max?
It's your show, you call it.
First we untie, then we unbuckle, and put them over here, next to my bedroll.
Fine.
The men laid their guns on the ground next to Smoke's bedroll.
Got coffee? Help yourself. It's fresh made.
Thanks. One for you. If it's poisoned or drugged, then we'll go out together.
It's neither. It's just hot.
So, how'd you put it together about Robert?
Family resemblance is strong. Then I followed Robert one day and saw you together.
He's flat out insane, you know.
Yeah, I know. What are you gonna do with him?
I honestly don't know, Smoke.
Judge Garrison has legal papers ordering him committed to the asylum.
Robert will never be confined in one of those places. They're treated worse than animals in there.
You better think of something to do with him after you're gone.
Am I going somewhere?
Yeah. You're either going to leave this area voluntarily, go to prison, or I'm gonna kill you.
God damn, but you are a gutsy man, Smoke Jensen. If the circumstances were different, I could really like you.
There's nothing about you that I like, Max.
That's a shame. I'm going to both enjoy and regret beating you to death.
Don't flatter yourself.
Max cut his eyes looking at Smoke. The man was all muscle and bone. Max upgraded his original estimate of Smoke's weight. His arms and shoulders and chest and hands were enormous. Max probably still had a good 60 pounds on the man, but he guessed accurately that Smoke would be quicker and able to dance around with more grace than he.
I'm not surprised that you came alone.
I do have some honor about me.
Honorable men do not make war against women and children. Neither do they rape young girls.
Aggie was a mistake. But both Robert and I have hot blood when it comes to girls. Get it from our father. It's a failing, I will admit.
Smoke wondered just how many young girls had suffered and died at the hands of the man he faced. And once again, the thought came to him. A bullet would be quicker, and it would be easier.
Well, I guess it's about that time.
Seems it.
After dropping their cups, they walked away from the campsite. Max flexed his arms and wiggled his hands and did a little boxing shuffle with his feet.
That's cute. Where'd you learn that? From a hurdy-gurdy girl.
You're gonna be easy, Jensen. That's one of Jim Mace's moves.
He must have done it better. You look kind of stupid. Damn, you're clumsy. Good block, though.
Smoke tasted blood from where Max glanced him on the mouth. Smoke's lip connected against Max's belly, but it was like hitting a tree. He danced back and let Max follow him. Neither man had as yet worked up a sweat or was even breathing hard. Both of them knew that this fight could last a long time. Max saw stars as Smoke's uppercut connected. Before he could fully recover, Smoke danced away. Blood was leaking out of one side of Max's mouth as he followed Smoke around the flats. Smoke suspected the big man had bitten his tongue due to that uppercut. Suddenly, Max dropped his fists and charged, trying to catch Smoke in a bear hug. Max's knee fell from under him as Smoke kicked it. Before he could catch his balance, Smoke was on him once more. Smoke felt the blows hard, one on the jaw, the other to the belly. He backed up. Max had a punch like the kick of a mule. Max stepped closer to put the finishing touches to Smoke. And Smoke knocked the crap out of Max Huggins. Max fell hard on the dirt. He wasn't hurt, just simply astounded that Jensen had actually knocked him down. Max was further astonished when Smoke backed up, allowing the man to get to his feet.
You're fighting ring rules?
Just as long as you do, Max.
Well, hell, if it's boxing that you want.
Both men were wary now, each of them knowing the other could do plenty of damage. They circled each other, Max with his fists held high, Smoke with his left fist held wide from his body, and his right fist just in front of and to one side of his head. Max smiled. That stance wouldn't help him at all. He moved in. Max brushed aside the left fake, leaving him open for Smoke's powerful right. Max felt his lips split and the blood gush. Smoke pressed in. Smoke pounded the man's arms thrown up to protect his face, hurting and bruising him, taking some of the power from him. Max shook off the blow to the head and saw an opening. The blows popped Smoke's head back and bloodied his mouth. The left had caught him above the eye and opened a cut. Smoke backed up, shook his head, and then plowed right back in, pressing the attack. Max jumped at Smoke, intending to boot the man to the ground. One boot did catch Smoke on the leg, bruising the flesh but not putting him down. Smoke countered with a kick of his own. Smoke swung again. Max's nose caved in, but he didn't back down. He came on, both fists held high. Max kicked out again. The force of the kick sent Smoke to the ground. Max came in to kick him again. Smoke rolled away and came up on his boots, a hard light in his eyes. Max had expanded this fight, moving away from ring rules with the kicks. That was the way the man wanted it, so be it. Max swung a looping right. Smoke caught the forearm and wrist and threw the man to the ground. Max's kidney burned as Smoke kicked it. He tried to get up. Max caught Smoke's jeans leg and pulled. They both got up, deciding it was better to box than it was to grapple. For a full minute, the men stood toe-to-toe and slugged it out, with each of them giving and receiving about the same amount of damage. But Smoke could tell the bigger man was losing some of his power. Max was fighting with his mouth open now. Smoke had known nothing but hard work all his life. Max had spent the last 15 years either sitting behind a desk planning his evil or sitting at a poker table cheating those who played the game of chance with him. Max hit the dirt again. Smoke landed another solid kick.
You know what I'm gonna do, don't you, Max? I'm gonna rearrange your face. When I get tired of hitting you, I'm gonna kick your face in.
I've had enough.
I imagine Aggie said something along those lines, didn't she, Max?
She was trash. Mr. Trash.
Smoke kicked Max in the ribs.
Now get up and fight, you sorry bastard.
Max searched around him for a weapon as he rose. A club, a rock, anything. He saw nothing. Smoke charged him. Max collapsed onto the ground, his strength gone. Smoke stood over him. The smaller man had taken his licks too. One eye was almost closed and blood was leaking from his nose and mouth. But he was on his boots and ready to fight.
You got a choice, big man. You either get up and fight, or as God is my witness, I'll kick you to death.
Max struggled up. He turned and faced Jensen, lifting his fists. He could get close enough. Maybe he could grab the smaller man and break his back. He lunged. The punches hit Max's ear, face, and rib cage. Waves of pain seared through the man. Hell, he was beyond mere pain. This was an agony new to him. He'd been moved into a sea of solid hurt. It was nothing like he had ever experienced before. His shirt had been torn from him sometime during the fight, and his upper torso was bruised and bloody. Smoke Jensen would not back off. Big Max Huggins stood like an oak tree that was being battered by the elements, his huge arms hanging by his sides. He could not find the strength to lift him anymore. Through eyes that were now nothing more than swollen slits, Max could see Jensen smiling at him. He had never seen a smile that savage on Smoke's face. Jensen's eyes were cold, killing cold. Max watched as Jensen measured him. He knew with a soaring feeling of relief that the fight was soon to be over. Smoke started that last punch somewhere down around his ankles. The big man lay stretched out on the ground. unconscious. Smoke muscled Big Max across his saddle and tied him there. He looped Max's gun belt on the saddle horn.
Go on, hoss!
Smoke soon headed for the high country, making camp not 5 miles from Hell's Creek. He had plans for that town. Smoke ached all over, and his hands were swollen. He looked for and found the plants he sought, carefully picking them and boiling them in water, then soaking his hands. He stayed snug in the camp for 2 days, resting and eating, and treating his hands until the swelling had gone down. He also capped and fused dynamite, tying them into 3-stick bombs. Star was rested and restless and eager to hit the trail. So at dawn of the third day after the fight on the flats, Smoke swung into the saddle and pointed Star's head toward Hell's Creek. The gun hands who watched as Big Max's horse walked slowly up the muddy and rutted main street of Hell's Creek could not believe their eyes. They were further astonished and some a little frightened when they untied Max and lowered him to the ground. To a man, none of them had ever seen a person beaten so badly as was Max. Doc Turner was fetched.
Oh, God! Max!
Robert took one look at his brother's battered body and knew the big man was hurt. He had the gun hands carefully carry him into Max's house, where he did a thorough examination.
Well, how is he?
No ribs are broken that I can detect, but his face will never be as it was, Val. Smoke Jensen did this deliberately. This is the most callous act I have ever witnessed. Jensen deliberately set out to destroy my brother's handsome looks. I have never believed in violence, but this has to be avenged.
Oh, yeah? What do you plan to do about it, Robert?
Why, I plan to step into my brother's boots and lead the raid against Barlow, that's what. What do you think about that, Mr. Singer?
The outlaws had to fight to hide their smiles. Of course they'd let Sonny Boy here lead the raid. Of course they'd go along with it. Because with Max out of the picture, they could ravage the town, rob the bank, and would not even have to share a damn thing with Big Max Huggins. And before they left the county, they would kill Robert Turner.
I think that's a damn good idea, Robert. I like it. I really do. When do you think we ought to hit that town?
Tomorrow morning, just as the bank opens.
Well, you're the boss, Robert.
Smoke left his horse in timber on the edge of town and worked his way up a dry creek bed, coming out behind a privy. He ducked back down as 2 men walked to the outhouse.
This time tomorrow, Larry, Barlow ain't gonna be nothing but a memory. And we'll have had our fill of women and be a damn sight richer.
Yeah, and we won't have to share none of it with Big Max. That's what makes it so rich to me. That goofy doctor said he'd give Max enough laudanum to keep him out for a day and a half. He'd give it to him just before we pull out.
So who's gonna kill the nut?
Hell, who cares? Sometime during the shooting, one of us will just plug him. I've got me an itch for some of them women in that town.
Oh yeah, me too!
The men stepped into the two-holer and closed the door. Smoke made his way back up the wash, swung into the saddle, and headed for Barlow.
It's looking like we've got company again, honey.
Yeah? Hi. Oh, looks like Smoke. Howdy, Jensen!
Hello, Mr. Brown. I can't stay long. I just got word the attack on Barlow's coming tomorrow.
Tomorrow? You want us in town, Smoke?
No. I want you men to load up full and be prepared to defend yourselves in case they decide to attack you first.
We'll be ready. Looking not too bad, considering, Smoke. Who won the fight?
Big Max is still unconscious.
Glad to hear it.
I'm heading for town. Yeah! It's tomorrow morning, people! Tomorrow morning! The men of Hell's Creek are going to hit the town at 9 o'clock to coincide with the bank opening. Start gathering up guns and ammo, and make certain the pumper is checked out and the fire barrels are full.
Smoke,
Smoke swung down from the saddle and handed the reins to the boy that helped out at the livery.
Rub him down good and give him all the corn he wants, boy.
Smoke stepped up on the boardwalk in front of the sheriff's office while others gathered up the rest of the townspeople. Smoke stayed in hurried, whispered conference with Sal, Judge Garrison, and Tom Johnson for a few minutes until the whole town was assembled in the street.
All right, everybody, here it is. Just quiet down.
Good. Now, there's a good chance that a rider was sent out to Red Malone's spread before I slipped into Hell's Creek and overheard the outlaws' plans. Red will probably attack us from the south, the same time the raiders hit us from the north. We've got to be ready to hit them twice as hard as they hit us. Jim's gonna head down to warn Joe Walsh and his people. Joe's gonna stay put and guard his ranch. Red hates him as much as he hates us. So it's gonna be up to us to defend this town and everything you people have worked for. Start getting ready for a war.
The crowds broke up into small groups, each group leader, already appointed, waiting to see where they were supposed to be when the attack came.
Tom.
Yes, Smoke?
You and your group take the inside of the bank. Take lots of ammo and water.
Will do, Smoke.
One group inside Marbley's store. Toby, you and your people will defend the hotel. Benson's group will take delivery. Ralph, you and your bunch will fight from the saloon. The rest of them know where to be and what to do. Let's start getting ready.
Sal looked at Smoke's battered face.
And need I have to ask who won the fight?
Big Max didn't. Just make sure everything's running smoothly. I need a hot bath and a change of clothes.
I'd give a pretty penny to see that scrap.
Yeah, he must have hurt him bad for Max not to be leading the raid come this morning.
Hey, Pete?
Yeah, Mr. Marbley?
About how many men are we facing tomorrow?
Near about 100 from Hell's Creek, maybe more than that. And all of Red Malone's bunch. We'll have them outnumbered, but bear this in mind. Then we'll be facing his killers. 99% of the townspeople ain't. And pass the word, boys! Don't give no mercy, because you sure as hell ain't gonna be getting none from them that attack us.
Smoke took a long, hot soak in their private bath in the suite, then napped for an hour. He dressed and began cleaning his guns, loading rifles, shotgun, and pistols up full. He took his spare pistols out of wraps and cleaned and oiled them, then loaded them up. They were old Remington Frontier 44s, and Smoke had had them for a long time. He liked the feel of them and was comfortable and confident with them in his hands.
Sally, early in the morning, you go get Victoria and Martha and the kids. Bring them back up to this suite. We'll be up long before then. The cafe and the hotel dining room is going to be open about 4 o'clock to feed those who don't eat at home. And we'll rearrange the furniture in this suite to stop any bullet. I'll have a boy start bringing up water to fight any fires that might start. Their plan is to destroy the town, so they'll be throwing torches.
Sally sat oiling and cleaning her own guns.
Vicky doesn't know anything about pistols, but Martha does. We'll have rifles and shotguns ready. How about Robert, Smoke?
I don't want to kill him, honey. I can't justify killing a crazy person unless there's just no other way out.
I've been reading that there's some new treatment for the mad, but insane asylums are just awful.
I've heard they are. Chain them down like wild animals until they die. I'm going to roam the town.
Everybody was pitching in to secure the town. The new bankers just arrived from the east were nervous about the upcoming fight, but doing their share and carrying water anyway, moving barricades into places and anything else they were asked to do. And Smoke could also read excitement in their faces. Sal caught up with him.
Where are you going to be come the morning, Smoke?
I'll be lone wolfing it, Sal, moving around. Did you see to it that everybody had a red bandana?
Everybody that'll be behind a friendly gun will have one tied around their right arm. That was a darn good idea of yours. That's going to help keep us from shooting our own people.
The dust and smoke are going to be bad when it starts. So I would suggest we water down the main street just before the bank opens. What do you think?
Another good idea. I'm going to miss you and Sally when y'all pull out.
You'll handle it. And Sal?
The sheriff turned to face him.
Martha and Vicky and the kids will be with Sally in our suite come the morning, so you don't have to worry about Victoria.
Sal blushed and headed across the street. Smoke smiled and continued his walking tour. The saloon had been turned into a fort, as had the livery stable and barn. Marbley's store was barricaded. Anything that might be broken had been taken from the shelves and stored in wooden boxes. Smoke nodded his approval and walked back to the hotel. The waiting was gonna be hard.
Way I see it, Red, we just ain't got much of a choice.
We have no choice. We both have warrants on us in other states. The town has to be destroyed and everybody in it dead and buried in deep graves. We'll toss the bodies into the fires and burn them before we bury them. The authorities, if any show up, won't be able to prove a damn thing.
Some of our men rode out today. Said they wasn't having no part of killing women and kids.
We don't need them. We're better off without them.
What neither of them knew was that the hands who had left were riding toward Barlow to join the defenders of that little town.
After Barlow is burned out, the outlaws will scatter to the wind. Now we'll ride and burn down Hill's Creek. We'll blame everything on Max's bunch. Hell, we can even say that we sided with the townspeople in trying to fight them outlaws off. We'll take some of our own men dead for sure. And we can point their graves out to the investigators as proof.
It still leaves Joe Walsh and his crew.
We'll deal with them. We've got them outnumbered 3-1. Soon as Barlow is done and over, we'll ride over to Circle W and clean out Walsh and his crew.
Then we can wipe out all of them damn hog farmers and other nesters, and the valley will be ours again.
Yeah. And some of them nested girls ain't that bad looking. We're gonna have some fun with them. Be just like old times. Hey, John, remember those days?
Yeah, I do.
Just let me get Jensen in my gun sights. All I need is one shot, front or back. Don't make no difference to me.
The town of Barlow rolled up the boardwalks early that evening, far earlier than usual. Everyone wanted to get a good night's sleep before the storm struck the next morning. Red's lightning hands, who had rebelled against fighting women and kids, had ridden in, holding up a white handkerchief. Well, it was almost white. And Smoke, along with Judge Garrison and Johnson, met him in the street.
Don't move, boys. You got a whole lot of guns on you.
We done quit, Red. We ain't having no part in killing women or little kids. If you want our help, we're here.
How do we know you weren't sent in here by Red to start shooting us in the backs come the attack in the morning?
Well, that's a good question, and I don't know how to answer it.
I do.
Sal stepped off the boardwalk and into the street.
Howdy, Long. How's the arm?
It's set real good. Howdy, Smoke. Remember me?
Yeah, I tossed you and your buddy out a window the first day here.
Bridie, yeah. Well, me and a few boys just couldn't take it anymore. We all right proud of you, Sal, you being elected sheriff and all. Me and Benny and Hale and Stacy here, we got to talking about that this morning. After that no good from Hell's Creek come talking to Red this morning about killing the women and kids and burning this town down. We couldn't do that, Sal. You've ridden some trails with us. You know we're not that kind of men. Oh, we've hired our guns out just like you've done for fighting wages. But there ain't none of us ever made a war again, nobody except in grown-up men. And we ain't about to start now. Smoke, I guess that's the only answer we can give you.
Sounds good to me, boys.
Me too.
Judge Garrison wore two old Remington 44s, the Army model, belted around his expansive waist. Both guns looked to Smoke as if they'd seen some action.
There'll be stars in your crown for this, boys.
Well, I don't know about that, Judge. I just don't want no more black marks against me in the judgment book. Good Lord knows I got plenty of them already.
Right will prevail, Smoke. Sometimes it just takes an outsider to prod those oppressed into action.
Smoke looked at the 44s belted around the judge's waist.
When was the last time you fired those, Judge?
I came out of the war between the states a colonel, Smoke, of cavalry. I had my law degree when I enlisted. I fought through nearly every major campaign with Lee. I graduated VMI, sir.
Then I won't worry about you, sir.
Coming from you, that is high praise.
Smoke was up and dressed for war long before dawn. He wore his customary two pistols in leather, his two spares were tucked behind his gun belt, and he carried an American Arms 12-gauge sawed-off shotgun, a bandolier of shells slung across his chest, bandit style. He and Sally had breakfast before the sun was up, and then he walked Lisa and Victoria back to the hotel, Lisa carrying her puppy Patches in her arms. Pete escorted Martha Feckles and the boy to the suite, and the women made ready for war. The men tied red bandanas around the upper part of their right arms. Since there were no females among the raiders who were riding to attack them, the women dressed in their customary attire. More than a few of them, including Mrs. Marbley, Victoria, Sally, and Martha, actually wore men's breeches. Smoke walked the town inspecting each water barrel, and there were many of them. He checked to see if the buckets were ready in case of fire. They were. He checked each store that was to house fighters. They were ready and willing, even if many of them were scared. Mrs. Marbley, a formidable-sized lady, had found herself a pair of men's overalls, and when she bent over, she looked like the rear end of a stagecoach. But she handled the double-barreled shotgun like she knew what she was doing. Smoke concluded that he would not want to mess with her. Jim was stationed 2 miles out of town on a ridge, a fast horse tied nearby. As soon as he spotted the dust of the raiders, he was to come hightailing it back into town and give the warning. Smoke walked to the north end of the town and leaned up against a hitch rail. He rolled him a cigarette and lit up, waiting for the action to start. He looked back up the wide street. It was void of any life. The horses were stabled safely and the children's pets were in the house out of harm's way. Smoke watched as a water wagon rolled down the street, then back up, watering the wide street to keep down the dust. He clicked open his watch. 8:30. He walked on down the street, coming to a nearly collapsed old building, a relic of a business of some sort that had failed. This was the last building on either side of the street. He stepped inside and looked in both rooms of the structure. He tried the back door, working it several times to make certain he could exit that way. There was not a window pane intact in any frame, so he didn't have to worry about being cut by flying glass. Smoke sat down on the dusty floor and waited. At 8:45, Jim came fogging into town from his post.
Here they come, folks! There's plenty to go around!
Smoke readied the sawed off and knelt by the window.
Here they come.
Smoke peeked from a window frame and nearly cried out in shock. Doc Turner was leading the bunch. He wore a pith helmet, the leather strap tied under his chin, and he was waving a sword. God knows where the hell he'd found either article in Hell's Creek.
Forward!
The raiders, more than 100 strong, thundered into town. Smoke let Robert and a few behind him gallop past, then he gave both barrels of the sawed off to the outlaws. Smoke immediately dropped the shotgun and jerked out his Colts. Horses began milling around, confused and frightened and riderless. Bodies lay in the street. Wounded outlaws, hands filled with guns, staggered up on the porch. He spotted Smoke and leveled his guns, but Smoke was quicker. Smoke took off at a run for the back door.
Fire! I just seen Jensen in that building!
Red and his bunch are attacking from the south!
Smoke ducked into the space between a home and a business and ran to the street. A hatless and bearded man stepped off the path and turned to face Smoke. Smoke raised his sawed off. Smoke filled both his hands with Colts. From the number of bodies littering the street in front of the bank, the Easterners were having a duck shoot and doing a damn fine job of holding their own. Smoke stepped back and reloaded the pistols and the shotgun.
Slay the Philistine!
Smoke turned around. Dr. Robert Turner was charging him on horseback, waving his sword. Smoke ducked the slashing sword that could have taken his head off and swung up behind Robert. Both men fell to the ground. Smoke recovered quickly, while Robert's helmet had fallen over his eyes. The doctor was out cold. Smoke picked up the slumped doctor, threw him over his left shoulder, and ran to a secluded alley. Smoke tore the pith helmet off and used the leather chin strap to bind Robert's hands behind his back. He used the man's belt to securely bind his ankles, then rolled the doctor under a building.
There. That'll keep you safe from everybody.
Two raiders, apparently having lost their appetite for any further battle, came racing up the street, heading north. Smoke stepped out and raised the sawed off.
Two more saddles cleared.
Smoke ran up the boardwalk toward the center of town, reloading the shotgun as he went. He turned down an alleyway toward the hotel's back door. Then he gritted his teeth. The door was not guarded. Just above Smoke on the second floor, Bridie kicked open the door to the presidential suite. He looked down at Lisa, huddled on the floor, holding her puppy close.
Well now, won't you just be a juicy little thing to have?
He holstered his guns and reached down for her, lust in his eyes.
You get away from her, scum!
Bridie looked up. Sally stood in the foyer, holding a sawed off in her hands, both hammers eared back.
I remember you.
Yeah, you were the sorry little coward who tried to kick us out. Your buddy saw the light. I guess you were just too dumb.
Big words. We'll just see how you feel about me after I have you too.
I doubt it.
Shh, shh. It's okay, Lisa. It's okay. He won't hurt anybody anymore.
Sally! I heard a shotgun. You all right in here?
We're just dandy. Would you please remove that garbage from the room, darling? It's scaring Lisa.
Sure.
Smoke dragged Bridie's ruined body out of the room and down the hall toward the second story window.
Well, isn't this just poetry? Bridie, the first time I met you, I threw you out this window. You lost some weight since the last time, though. Maybe you'll clear the awning.
Bridie's body did clear the awning. In fact, it flew out far enough to knock Sid York right out of the saddle. The outlaw stared in horror at what was left of Bridie laying on top of him.
Oh, goddamn!
He looked up at Smoke, standing behind the shattered window, grinning down at him. Sid lifted his pistol, and Judge Garrison, who was standing in his own office, fired both his Remington 44s.
Well, that worked out just fine.
Down on the street, Sal stepped out from his position just as John Steele was rounding a corner.
Hey, John!
The foreman of the Lightning whirled in a crouch, both hands by his holstered guns.
You always bragged about how good you was, John. You wanna find out now?
John dragged iron. Oh! John was not that good. He fell off the boardwalk and landed in a horse trough.
Oh, have to remember to clean that out.
Judge Garrison slipped out the back door of his office and came face to face with Paul Cartwright.
You used to love to lord it over me, Paul. You have guns in your hands. Use them.
The deposed sheriff's guns came up. Judge Garrison lifted his Remington Army Model 44. The judge reloaded and walked on, conviction and courage in his eyes. At the same time, Larry Gale was deciding he was part of a lost cause. He'd been thrown from his rearing bucking horse, and he was now cautiously making his way out of town on foot.
The hell with Barlow, the hell with Red, and the hell with Max. The hell with it all.
Going somewhere, Larry.
Gale spun. Pete Akins stood facing. He drew. Pete was knocked back as the slug hit his shoulder, but Pete was much more careful with his shot. Larry's whole damn forehead caved in. Pete walked to the prostrate and very dead outlaw and looked down at him.
Ooh, boy. He was ugly alive. Dead, you'll probably come back to haunt graveyards.
Ella Mae, Tom Johnson's wife, was struggling with a man who had far less than honorable intentions on his mind. He ripped her bodice open and stared hungrily at her flesh. Momentarily free, Ella Mae jerked up the coffee pot next to her and threw the boiling contents into the man's face. The outlaw lurched through the living room, finding his way out the open front door. He stumbled out into the street and right into the path of a riderless horse. Across the street, Clark Hall finally reached the bank. The door was locked.
Son of a bitch!
He hurled himself against the door and staggered upright.
I did it! I made it!
Just in time to face several men with shotguns.
Oh, shit!
Clark Hall was literally torn out of his boots and thrown back out into the street. The shooting was over. The horses had run out of town, taking their wounded with them. An eerie silence fell over the town. Smoke stepped out into the street, the Remington Frontier 44s in his hands. Judge Garrison joined him.
All right, people. Gather up the wounded, and we'll patch them up as best we can, and then try them. We were forced to use frontier justice to stop this, but there'll be no unauthorized hangings. From now on, we go by the book.
Ral from the saloon was dead, shot through the head. Toby at the hotel had taken a slug across his shoulder. Several other citizens were wounded. But Ralph was the only fatality. The streets and alleys of the town were littered with the dead and wounded. Guns lay everywhere one looked. Tom Johnson was wandering the main street, counting the dead and wounded.
Red Malone's not here, Sheriff.
How about his men, Tom?
Most of them are dead. I saw two of them riding out north early on.
You have enough to do here for three men, Sal. Besides, this is personal between me and Red. I'll get him, and I'll bring him in alive if I can.
Well, you better find him before Joe Walsh does. Joe told him years ago that if he ever caught him without his private army, he'd kill him.
There's that much bad blood between them? I know they didn't like each other.
Hell yeah! He helped found this town. Joe, I mean. Him and Red don't like each other at all.
Smoke walked the littered street, looking at the dead and wounded. Alex Bell, Ben Webster, Nelson Barrett, Dave Poe, and Val Singer were not among them. That left a lot of very bad men still on the loose. But Smoke doubted that they would ever return to Barlow.
Jim, I'll be back. I'm going after Red Malone.
Red Malone was not about to run. Smoke was sure of it. But he wondered about Max. What would the big man do? That is, if he were still alive. Because there was a good chance that the Renegades returned to Hell's Creek after their failure in Barlow and killed him. Smoke rode on. He was soon on lightning range, and within minutes, facing three lightning cowboys. One of them was wearing a bloody shirt due to a bullet graze on his arm.
The people of Barlow are signing warrants right now, boys. Best thing you can do is just ride and keep on riding. If you think Sal and his deputies won't come out here to get you, you're flat wrong.
The cowboys looked at each other, then back at Smoke.
You'll let us ride?
Yeah, ride on.
Well, I'll tell you this much. Red is alone, except for that no-account daughter of his, but you won't take him alive.
Well, I'd hate to kill a man in front of his daughter.
Shit. That girl is as low and mean-spirited as her pa. She don't give a hoot and holler for him. All she wants is the ranch.
Thanks. I hope I don't see you boys again.
You won't.
When Smoke rode into the yard, Tessie was sitting on the porch. A shotgun lay on the porch floor. Tessie looked up and saw Smoke. Smoke saw that her dress was torn. She pulled it back to expose more skin.
Where's your father?
He's dead! In the house! He tried to attack me! He went crazy! I had to defend my honor!
Inside, the smell of blood hit Smoke hard. He walked through the house until he found Red, dead, sprawled in front of a safe in his study. The door was open, and greenbacks and small sacks of gold lay on the floor and in the safe. Smoke frowned. Red Malone had been shot in the back at close range.
Oh, I'm shamed forever. My own father tried to assault me. Oh, the dishonor and disgrace of it all.
I hate to say it, Red, but even you probably deserve better kids than you had.
Oh, what am I gonna do with this big old ranch? Why, I'm just a woman. I can't handle men's work.
I certainly don't envy you, ma'am. Don't you have anybody else left on the ranch?
Just the cook. She's gone visiting friends for the day. I suppose I could get her to help me bury Pa. You think he'll keep till late this afternoon?
I expect so, ma'am.
What? Are you just gonna leave me here all alone with my poor dead father? I could sure use some comforting.
Tessie batted her eyes at him. It was the most goddamn grotesque thing Smoke had ever seen, and he had seen some sights in his time.
I'll tell the sheriff what happened.
Smoke backed Star up. Damned if he was gonna turn his back on that woman. When he had backed Star to the point where he was reasonably sure she could not hit him with the sawed off, Smoke gave the big black his head.
Yeah!
Star took off like the wind. Truth be told, that horse wasn't real thrilled with Tessie neither.
Well, any news from the Malone, Smoke?
He's dead. Shot in the back. Tessie was sitting outside, shotgun right next to her.
She shot her own father?
I think it's safe to surmise that. Looked like he had just opened his safe.
She'll take every dollar from the safe, sell off the herds, and be gone in a month. And good riddance.
Smoke looked around. Most of the bodies had been tossed in wagons and were being hauled off to be buried in a mass grave.
Wagon's coming, Smoke.
Jim pointed to the north.
Saloon girls, gamblers, and assorted riffraff from Hell's Creek. Been happening all day. Rats leaving a sinking ship.
No, a burning one. Because that's what we're going to do in the morning.
Suits me, Smoke. I'll ride with you.
Hey, what are you doing?
Sal walked up to the lead wagon. The people inside were getting ready to get off.
Oh, no, you don't. Keep moving. And don't stop until you're in the next county. And that sheriff won't want you either, because I'm fixing to wire him and tell him about you, scum.
One of the ladies of the evening, sitting in the back of the wagon, gave Jim a very obscene gesture with a finger.
Hey, I'll jerk you out of that wagon and hand you over to the good ladies of this town, and they'll shave your head and tar and feather you.
The shady lady tucked her finger away and stared straight ahead. Wagons rumbled out of sight.
Hey, why wait until the morning? Hell, Smoke, let's ride up there and put that town out of its misery right now. You, me, Jim, the judge, Tom, whoever.
Smoke was curious to see what had happened to Big Max.
All right, let's ride.
Soon, Smoke, Pete, Tom Johnson, Judge Garrison, and a half a dozen more men rode into Hell's Creek. They were heavily armed, for no one among them knew what awaited them there. It was desolation, empty, completely devoid of life. The men inspected every building. The town was deserted. There was no sign of Big Max Huggins. Smoke looked at the safe in Max's quarters. The door was open, and there was no sign of forced entry. Max had found the strength to open it and ride. Smoke found a coal oil lantern.
Good riddance. Hit!
The other men did the same. In half an hour, the town of Hell's Creek, Montana, was no more than an unpleasant memory. All that was left for Sally and Smoke were the goodbyes to the people of Barlow and the ranchers and farmers out in the county. In the short time they'd been there, a lot had happened. They had discovered some friendships that would last forever. Robert was transferred to the Territorial Mental Asylum, and the doctors there gave him very little hope of ever recovering. Through Sally's help, the new bank agreed to loan Martha and Pete the money for a down payment on the lightning spread. The two were married the day before Smoke and Sally were due to pull out. Tessie Malone left the county the very day she sold lightning to Pete and Martha. Much to Sal's embarrassment, Victoria announced that the newly elected sheriff had proposed marriage to her and that she had accepted. Victoria had also accepted a position of teaching at the new school. The other new school teacher in town, a cute little redhead, was making goo-goo eyes at Jim DeGone. Bets were that he'd be roped and hogtied before summer's end. Here, the town of Barlow had been quiet for a week. Not one shot had been fired. Not one fist had been swung in anger. Sal said that it was just too good to last. He was right.
Help! I need a doctor! I need a doctor!
What in the world? Is that one of Joe Walsh's hands?
Yeah, looks like he's carrying something. Something like a buddy.
It's Smoke! He's been hurt bad!
Oh, damn. Curly, what happened?
I don't know. I just found Smoke lying way out in the countryside.
Where's Sally?
I didn't see her around, but he's bleeding bad from the head.
Oh, damn. Doctor! I need a doctor now!
Smoke was not dead, but had the bullet that grazed his skull been 1 millimeter more to the right, the slug would have blown out his brains. Fact was, he was back on his feet the next day, over the arguments of the new doctor in Barlow. He strapped on his guns. Every able-bodied man in Barlow had been on the search for Sally. They'd ridden back into town at dawn, weary after losing the trail.
Smoke, your head's not all better yet. You sure you want to do this?
She's my wife, Sal. I can't wait until I'm better to get her back.
Do you remember anything about what happened? Any faces? We might be able to make warrants and send out some marshals.
All I can remember is that we rode down to the edge of Swan Lake. We were going to pick up the Swan River and follow it south to the railroad. We stopped to water and rest our horses, and then my head felt like it had exploded. That's it.
You sure you don't want some help?
Yeah. A big posse is too easy to spot. Besides, Sally will leave messages along the way. Messages and markers that would make sense only to me. It's Big Max. I'll bet on that. I was instrumental in bringing down his little empire. So now he intends to destroy as much of what I hold dear as possible. See ya, Sal.
Smoke rode easy, down to the south end of the lake. He searched the area, using tactics taught to him by the old mountain man preacher. He worked in ever-widening circles on moccasin-clad feet. By mid-afternoon, he'd picked up the trail, the true one, not the one that had been deliberately left for the posse. The trail headed north by northeast. The lead horse was carrying a heavy load. That'd be Max Huggins. Smoke recognized the hoof prints of Sally's mare. If they stayed on this trail, they were heading for Glacier Country. Smoke doggedly stayed with the trail, taking his time, being careful not to miss a thing. He found where they'd camped at the base of and on the east side of Mount Evans. Sally had left 3 stones in the form of an arrowhead, pointing toward the Flathead River. Smoke followed, his head no longer aching, and his strength returned. He came upon a lone hunter, and the man took one look into Smoke's eyes and felt the chill of death touch him. The hunter backed off the trail and let Smoke pass with just a nod of his head. The man would eventually tell his grandkids that he had once seen Smoke Jensen on the prod, and that it was a sight he never wanted to see again. On the east side of the South Fork Flathead, Smoke determined that Max had met up with the tracks of 12 riders. Smoke figured it was the remnants of Max's gang. Several miles farther, one rider had left the bunch. Smoke left the trail and circled. He picketed Star and worked his way back a bit on foot. He smiled when he saw who had stayed behind to waylay him. It was the young man who had taken to calling himself Kid Brewer. The young man with pimples on his face who had made the obscene gesture at Smoke after the window washing incident.
waiting for me, kid?
Kid Brewer whirled, his hands frozen over the butts of his tied down guns. Smoke Jensen stood facing him, a Winchester pointed at his belly.
You really shouldn't have taken a part in the abduction of my wife, Punk. Coming at me is one thing. Taking my wife is something entirely different.
Yeah? So what do you think you're gonna do about it? Ow, my elbow! You shot my damn elbow! Ow!
You still got your other arm, and if you want to keep it that way, you'll talk.
Oh, okay. It's Max. He took your wife.
Him and who else?
A bunch of people.
Names?
Val Signer, Nelson Barrett, Ben Webster, Dave Poe, Alex Bell.
That's all of them?
Yes!
All right. Let me just take these guns. Now get in the saddle.
Put my arm!
Do it!
No!
Now ride. And if I ever see you again, and you're wearing a gun, I'll kill you.
Smoke backtracked and once more picked up the trail. He found where they had nooned and discovered Sally had taken stones and spelled out okay. With a smile that would have backed up the devil, Smoke rode on. He left the obvious trail and rode up into the high lonesome, into the east slopes of the Rockies. He dismounted and took his binoculars, carefully scanning the area below him. He scanned it once, then twice, and then a third time. He picked up the thin tentacle of Smoke on the third try. He studied the area below him until he felt he had found a way in. By the campfire, Nelson Barrett was enjoying a cup of good hot coffee.
So long, Nelson.
Smoke let Barrett's body fall face first into the small fire. Then he poured himself a cup of coffee.
Ugh. Nelson, this is some terrible coffee you made here.
He carefully put out the fire, leaving Nelson where he lay. He crossed the middle fork of the Flathead River and rode into the area that would someday become the Glacier National Park. Smoke wore his jacket for it had turned cold. His thoughts turned to Preacher and how much the old man would have enjoyed the beauty of this rugged, lonesome country. Then his thoughts lost all trace of beauty and turned savage and ugly as he continued to follow the trail of Max Huggins and his dwindling gang of thugs. Dave Poe and Ben Webster squatted around a campfire, boiling coffee and frying bacon.
Damn! That woman sure is a handful, Dave. Been hollering and cussing the whole time. If I was Max, I'd have just gone ahead and shot her. She ain't never gonna be what Max wants her to be. You know what, Dave? I say we go back and kill Jensen, if that is him behind us. And then we kill Max, we take his money, and have our pleasures with the woman. There ain't nobody ever gonna find her body in this place.
Good luck with that.
You cooking bacon?
Smoke dragged the bodies away from the fire and dumped them down a ravine. He pulled the picket pins of their horses and set them free. Smoke got Star and unsaddled him, rubbing the animal down and allowing him to graze for a time. And by that time, the bacon was done and the coffee was ready. Smoke drank and ate, sopping out the grease in the frying pan with a hunk of stale bread. He rolled and lit a cigarette and leaned back, enjoying the warmth of the fire. If Kid Brewer was telling the truth, all that remained were Max, Val Singer, and Alex Bell. He moved away from the fire, laid his head on his saddle, and went to sleep. He slept for a couple of hours, then rose and began circling the camp. He found another stick message from Sally. Three sticks laid out side by side with four sticks next to them in the shape of a crude D.
Triple Divide Peak. Has to be.
Preacher had told him about this country, as had other old mountain men. And like most outdoorsmen, Smoke retained that knowledge in his head, a mental map. He took a chance cutting straight east for a time, then turning north just west of what he felt was the Continental Divide. If he was right, and Max and what was left of his gang were not too far ahead of him, he would make Triple Divide Peak ahead of Max. Smoke pushed the Star that day, but it was nothing the big horse couldn't take and still have more to give. Man and horse traveled through country that seemed as unchanged now as it was when God created the earth. The next morning, Smoke was up before dawn. He didn't build a fire. He watered Star and left the big horse to graze. Below him, by one of the many small lakes that were scattered like jewels in this wilderness, he had spotted a campfire. Leaving his boots and spurs behind, Smoke slipped into his moccasins and picked up his rifle. He had it in his mind that he and Sally would be riding toward the Sugarloaf come noon. Smoke moved through the thick underbrush and damp grass like a wraith. His clothing was of earth tones, blending in with his surroundings. From this high up vantage point, Smoke had seen the second fire. That would be where Max and Sally were camped. Max had chosen to make his stand, if that's what he had in mind, on the flat of a sheer drop-off, maybe 1,000 feet above where his two remaining gunmen were camped, waiting for Smoke Jensen.
Let us not disappoint you, gentlemen. I do hate to keep people waiting.
No word from any of them we left behind, Bill. That means Jensen got him.
Alex Bell held onto his coffee, warming his hands on the tin cup.
That man's a devil. Straight out of hell. Has to be. Let's get out of here, Val. The hell with Max and the woman. Let's just ride.
It's too late.
The hell do you mean?
Jensen's here.
Alex looked wildly around him. He could see nothing, only the seemingly impenetrable tangle of brush that was all around him.
I don't see nothing. I don't hear nothing.
No, you wouldn't with Jensen, but he's here.
You're beginning to spook me, Val.
We should have left when Jensen started trailing us. We should have just pulled out and got gone. Now it's too late.
That's right, Val. Now it's too late.
Oh, shit!
You'll have to shoot better than that.
Come out here and fight, damn you!
The .44 slug doubled Bell over, taking him just above the belt buckle. Val Singer had not moved. He stood tall, his right hand close to the butt of his Colt. He waited. Smoke stepped out of the brush. He carried the rifle in his left hand, his right hand by his side.
I guess we do it now, don't we, Smoke?
I reckon.
No point in my saying I'd just ride out and leave you be.
No.
You're a hard man, Smoke.
Yeah.
You're cold as the devil himself.
Val jerked iron.
We all make mistakes.
You sure as hell did.
Give me some coffee, Smoke.
You're gut shot. Worst thing in the world for you is liquid.
For Christ's sake, I'm a good 200 miles from a doctor.
Here you go.
Thanks.
Smoke held the tin cup patiently as the dying man drank. To the west and above, Smoke and Singer, Sally had been working for several hours, rubbing the rawhide that bound her wrists against a rock. Keeping her hands behind her, she began to work circulation back into them. Max turned to look at her. His face was a ruin. Smoke had destroyed the man's handsome looks with his fists. Madness shone in his eyes now. Madness combined with a burning hatred for Smoke Jensen.
You heard the shots?
Yes.
I'm next.
I'm sure.
Max tried to smile. The broken bones in his face twisted his smile into a grimace.
I've got about an hour before Jensen can work his way up here. So I'll have you and then throw you off this cliff.
I'm cold. May I scoot a little closer to the fire?
May I? Oh, my, how proper. Yes, Sally, you may.
Sally reached around and quickly untied the rawhide that bound her ankles, but left the rawhide looped around her boots.
Bill's dead. I'm about gone. Just Max is left, and I expect you'll nail him too. You gonna bury us, Smoke?
No.
He's just gonna leave us for the buzzards and the bears and the wolves.
Yeah.
You know, that ain't decent.
You're not a decent person, Singer. There's nothing decent about you.
I was drove to a life of crime.
That's horse shit. Don't go out with a lie on your lips.
I guess. All them books them folks back east write about the glamorous life on the Hoot Owl Trail. They don't know nothing. All the outlaws I ever seen, me included, it was dirty, and it was hungry and cold and miserable 99 days out of 100. But there ain't no point in wishing I could change it, is there?
No, there isn't.
Smoke?
Yeah.
You're a good man, Jensen. You got a good woman. I wish you both the best.
Thanks, Val. You want to be buried with your boots on?
No. It's gonna be hot enough where I'm going.
Max continued to stare down into the valley. Sally took a good-sized chunk of wood from the fire and silently stepped up behind the man. One end of the firebrand was blazing hot.
Max?
Hmm?
Max turned.
What the hell?
Sally jammed the blazing wood into Max's open mouth. Then she pushed forward. Sally rubbed her aching ankles and wrists, then set about making fresh coffee and slicing bacon.
Hello, Smoke. What took you so long?
I buried Val Singer. Are you all right?
I am now.
The sun burst out of the clouds and mist of mid-afternoon.
No point in starting out now. We can wait until morning.
Oh, you have something in mind?
Well, actually, what I had in mind was...
Sally came to Smoke then and whispered in his ear. Smoke took her in his arms.
Now that's the best suggestion I've heard in a long time.
Smoke Jensen, the Mountain Man 7, War of the Mountain Man, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 1990, William W. Johnstone. Production copyright 2009, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation, all rights reserved. Performed by Mort Shelby, James Lewis, Terrence Aselford, Michael Glenn, Andy Clements, Elizabeth Jernigan, James Konacek, Christopher Graybill, Michael John Casey, David Coyne, Jonathan Watkins, Thomas Penny, Ken Jackson, Tim Getman, Johann Detweiler, Eric Messner, Dylan Lynch, Colleen Delaney, Richard Rowan, Ren Casey, Jason Stiles, Scott McCormick, Casey Platt, Tim Carlin, and Nanette Savard. Additional Boot Hill Boys by the Dead Giveaways. Directed by Bob Supan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers, James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Nathaniel Perry and Temeskin Woodman. Original music score by Johann Detweiler and Brian Patton. Smoke Jensen theme by Johann Detweiler. Book adapted for graphic audio by Dan Smith. If you enjoyed War of the Mountain Man, read the Pinnacle Edition. visit www.kensingtonbooks.com and be sure to look for William W. Johnstone's The First Mountain Man, Blood Bond, The Last Gunfighter, Eagles, and Sidewinder series, all available from Graphic Audio at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloads and podcasts. Now, keep listening for exciting previews of other Graphic Audio titles. We appreciate it. Available now from Graphic Audio.
Holy shit!
In this world growing more crowded and perilous by the day, John Rourke must use every means at his command to stop the despotic dreams of the hero Marshall and his doomsday weapon. A weapon unleashing the evil, the beast, lurking in the heart of every man to serve the lusts of Vladimir Karamazov.
What are your plans?
What do you do, Herr Doctor?
You are your father. But in some ways, I think you are not.
You didn't answer me.
I would blame the so-called hero Marshall. I would also anticipate Herr Dr. Rourke's reactions once radio silence can be broken.
Very good. And very correct.
Comrades! This is Major Natalia Anastasia Diamarovna of the Committee for State Security. You have been betrayed by my husband, Vladimir Karamazov. He is not a hero. He is a traitor to you, to Russia, to Russia's history, to all the people of the world. He is evil. You fight now, brother against brother, father against son, all in service to Karamazov's lust for power.
The Survivalist, number 14, The Terror.
If you can't find that Graphic Audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different Graphic Audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets that include 5 books of a series, available only at www.graphicaudio.net.